difficult time at the farm this morning. Last week, we talked about the first of the four horsemen. Revelation chapter 6, the opening of the first seal, and we saw the first horseman, who was the one in white. Okay? First seal. A white horse with a white rider. What were the accoutrements of the rider? Do you remember?
A bow with no arrows.
He had a bow with no arrows. And what was given to him?
A crown.
A crown. A crown was given to him. But not a royal crown, not a diadem, but a, how do you say it, Dave?
What's that?
It starts with an S-T sound. The crown, a Stephanos. Right? So, a human crown, okay, and it's given to him. So, now we talked about the three different typical ways that this is interpreted. This being, some would say this is Jesus, some would say that this is the Antichrist, and then I'm going to tell you that I believe the best interpretation is a metaphor for a peace, a metaphor for peace. But not a true peace, but a false peace, or a human peace. So it's real in a sense, but it's human's peace. It is a peace that humanity finds, okay? And I think it's fairly obvious why I and others reject the notion that this is Jesus Christ, okay? Because he's not wearing a royal crown, like he is in chapter 19. He is part of what we see as a chronological sequence of events in Revelation, so it does not make sense that this would be him at this point either. And he follows in with these other horsemen. It's just to see this as Christ doesn't seem to fit that interpretation. And then we checked a number of passages that show us how, well, and I'll say, I don't believe that it is the Antichrist per se, because then you have the next three horsemen that come along that are clearly metaphorical, okay? And so it's kind of strange to think, okay, this is a real person on this horse, but then the next three are not real persons, okay? It's just difficult to make that make sense. However, this false peace that's brought into the world here is clearly it's clearly part of the, and the Antichrist is a part of that. He is the main character, and we'll be focusing and talking a bit about the Antichrist now, but it more so later on when we get to, I believe it's chapter 13, where it literally is talking specifically about the Antichrist. And so we see this false peace. And last week we talked about somehow peace on earth, peace in the world, is something that humanity has long been hunting for, right? That's what I said. Every beauty queen says, I just want world peace.
Yeah.
Right? So peace is something that humanity longs for. There's a longing within us. I believe it's a natural, God-given longing that we wish for peace. However, we're fallen, we're sinful, and so peace for humans is often done at what expense? If I want peace, you've got to do it my way, right? So it's eventually at the expense of somebody else, okay? Because, well, you're rocking my peace here, so here's a gun. Start behaving, conforming to my form of peace, right? And that's been the way it is for a long time. Rome had the peace, the Pax Romana, right? The peace of Rome. It was done at a sword point. Okay, there was not peace without bloodshed. Okay, there was. You could have peace, but you had to do it Rome's way, and you had to suffer the consequences of Roman justice and Roman corruption and a lot of the other exigencies of the Roman Empire. So we're just going to briefly review this, and then we're going to cover the other portions, the other three seals, the other three riders. but I want to make sure that we didn't miss a few critical things. We talked about how there's an example of a peace, a worldwide peace, one other time in the Bible. It's a time, how does humanity generally look at what will happen when we have worldwide peace? There'll be one world government, right? And that's kind of self-evident, because in order to stop wars between different countries and different governments, we need one government, right? That just, well, boom, there's end of our problem, right? If we just didn't have different countries competing for things, if we could all work together, hold hands, I'd like to teach the world to sing, you know? So one world government. So where did we see? I know some of you weren't here last week, so I'm doing a little extra review just so we're all on the same page. One world government. We saw it happen where? At the Tower of Babel. Genesis chapter 11, I believe. The Tower of Babel. And we had one world government. We had world peace, as it were, under the dictates of a very cruel leader and king named Nimrod, who was a mighty killer, right? As the Bible tells us. And so God saw what humanity was doing and what happens in a one world government, in a fallen humanity. Where was this all headed to? Right back to what God had just dealt with, right? In Genesis chapter 6, where what was the desire and the longing of every man's mind continuously?
Evil.
Okay, and so God came down, wiped them out, started over with eight people, and all of a sudden humankind within one generation is like, or two generations, I should say, Nimrod was Noah's grandson. It's like, let's get right back to it. Okay, and God did what?
Confused
their languages and split them up and has diversified and eliminated that confluence of power, right, that comes from a one world government. He split them up and pushed them out so that it decentralized power. There was no centralized power anymore because you had competing nations. And we know from our studies in Romans and other places, right, that God established government to do what? Romans chapter 13. Right, to punish evil and to reward those who do good, right? So God ordained government to limit the exigencies of humanity, which is to constantly drive itself down the hole of more and more evil and wickedness, right? Okay, so yet because humans wish for peace, right, we see that we would head back down this road again, and I think, you know, in Jesus' time, in Apostle John's time of writing this, some of this is really difficult to understand, right? But they also had the Roman Empire, and they saw how it was spreading across, how Greek Empire previous to that had spread across in the Greek language. What unified these was common language, right? Okay. Why did Rome fall eventually? As a student of history, I think one of the major reasons is they split their language. Right? And you had the East and the West half, and it split right around languages. One half did Greek, that became the Byzantine Empire, and the other half stayed Latin, that became the Holy Roman Empire. Well, boring history, I know, I think it's fascinating. But you see how important language is, right, to unifying humanity. And we are now approaching a time in world history where we're more unified by language than ever before. Right? We not only do we have so many people able to speak common languages, because we see the diminution of many smaller languages, but we have computers that help us. We have the ability to communicate. I don't know if any of you ever use the C translation option on your YouTube or Facebook. It's pretty remarkable. Okay, and so we're seeing, to some extent, you can almost think about how easier it's going to be in the future on languages. And then there was the one point I brought to you from the book of Zephaniah, which I thought was fascinating, where it says that in the end, God God's going to unite us all in a pure language. And I think that's fascinating. So, anyway, looking at the white horse, this peace that's coming, and we talk a little bit about how the Antichrist figures into all of this false peace. The Antichrist has several key passages where we can look him up and where we're going to study him more in the future. But just for a brief look, we can look at 2 Thessalonians 2, 8 through 12. We're going to look at Daniel 8, 23 through 25, and Daniel 11, 36 through 39. So take out your Bibles, and we'll turn over to 2 Thessalonians. Chapter 2, verses 8 through 12. And then the lawless one will be revealed, whom the Lord will consume with the breath of his mouth and destroy with the brightness of his coming. The coming of the lawless one is in according to the work of Satan, with all power, signs, and lying wonders, and with all unrighteous deception among those who perish, because they did not receive the love of the truth, and that they might be saved. And for this reason, God will send among them a strong delusion, that they should believe the lie, that they all may be condemned who did not believe the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness. Okay, keep those thoughts in your mind, maybe even keep your finger there, and turn over to Daniel, chapter 8. After your Old Testament, after the book of Ezekiel, come to Daniel. Daniel chapter 8, verses 23 through 25. And in the latter time of their kingdom, when the transgressors have reached their fullness, a king shall rise, having fierce features, who understands sinister schemes. His power shall be mighty, but not by his own power. He shall destroy fearfully and shall prosper and thrive. He shall destroy the mighty and also the holy people. Through his cunning he shall cause deceit to prosper under his rule, and he shall exalt himself in his heart. He shall destroy many in their prosperity. He shall even rise against the prince of princes, but he shall be broken without human means. All right, and then stay in Daniel, but go to chapter 11, verses 36 through 39. Then the king shall do according to his own will. He shall exalt and magnify himself above every god, shall speak blasphemies against the God of gods, and shall prosper till the wrath has been accomplished, for what has been determined shall be done. He shall regard neither the god of his fathers, nor the desire of women, nor regard any goal, any god, for he shall exalt himself above them all. But in their place he shall honor a god of fortresses, and a god which his fathers did not know, he shall honor with gold and silver, with precious stones and pleasant things. Thus he shall act against strong fortresses with a foreign god, which he shall acknowledge and advance its glory. And he shall cause them to rule over many and divide the land for gain. These are just a few of the passages that we could look at. We're going to go to Daniel chapter 9. One more. Daniel chapter 9. Starting verse 26. And after the 62 weeks, Messiah shall be cut off, but not for himself. And the people of the prince who is to come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary. The end of it shall be with a flood, until the end of the war of desolations are determined. Then he shall confirm a covenant with many for a week, but in the middle of the week he shall bring an end to the sacrifice and offering. And on the wing of abomination shall be the one who makes desolate, even until the consummation which is determined is poured out on the desolate. And this parallels a passage we read last week from Matthew chapter 24 in Jesus' Olivet Discourse, verses 16 through 22. So we see Jesus himself talking about the Antichrist. I want you to think about two particular characteristics of the Antichrist that you heard repeatedly in several of these passages.
exalts himself.
He exalts himself. That's important. What else? He promotes unrighteousness. He is violent. He's killing. Okay, all of those things. But there's two really important characteristics. Where does he get his power from? It says he doesn't get his power from himself, but he gets it from Satan. Okay? Power is from Satan. And then there's one particular word that ties his actions together across these many passages that he is repeatedly using to get things done. Do you know what it is? Did you catch it? It's a short little word. Lies, or, depending on your translation, deceit. Okay? He is, as Satan is, a deceiver. Okay? He works through deceit and lies and cunning and trickery. It says he knows what people are doing and he's able to do these things. He makes a covenant with the people and then he breaks the covenant. He is a deceiver. He is a liar. Okay? And when you build your peace on lies and deceit, right? This is the typical human form. This is what you all complain about government all the time, right? We all complain about this. They're all lying all the time. Okay? So we see that this false king of the world, this false peace in utopia, the crown is given to him, but he is a deceiver. He's full of cunning. And he is a killer. He has Satan's power. But he establishes this peace, and the people love it. It says that he's like, they prosper, right? When we read those passages in Daniel, talks about them prospering, but then he takes from them, okay? And so we see again and again that he is a deceiver. Now I want us to go back to Matthew chapter 24. See what Jesus said about this time. Matthew 24, verses 3 through 5, and then a few others. Now he sat on the Mount of Olives, and the disciples came to him privately, saying, "Tell us, when will these things be, and what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age?" And Jesus answered and said to them, "Take heed that no one deceives you, for many will come in my name, saying, 'I am the Christ,' and will deceive many. And you will hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you're not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. For nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famines, pestilence, and earthquakes in various places. All of these are the beginning of sorrows." These are just a few verses. Skip to chapter 11, verse 11. "Then many false prophets will rise up and deceive many." And look over to verse 21. "For then there will be great tribulation, such as not been from the beginning of the world or until this time, nor ever shall be. And unless those days were shortened, no flesh would be saved. But for the elect's sake, those days will be shortened. Then if anyone says to you, 'Look, here is the Christ,' or 'There,' do not believe it. For false Christs and false prophets will rise and show great signs and wonders to deceive, if possible, even the elect." Deception, right? Jesus is emphasizing again and again, deception. And many false Christs, many deceivers. What do we even see in our present day and age, especially in the church? Lots of deceivers, lots of deception. It's unbelievable what's going on in the church about the false, and I use the word church meaning places that call themselves churches, okay? But the deception and the deceit, I beg of you, don't become enamored with the people on television without checking to make sure that they are really true biblical teachers. Okay, it's so hard to find a good one on television. It's like they don't give them a platform. Okay, they give platforms to the ones who are after money. And It's just so frustrating to me to see guys on there who are like selling little packets of water, right? Take the holy spring water and sprinkle it and you get your new job and get your new house and get your new car, right? And people are buying that. And I don't encourage you to do this because I don't feel like as your Sunday school teacher, it's necessarily a good thing to encourage you to watch John Oliver series, but he did a really outstanding segment where he wrote letters with one of these. I think he did the guy with Dollar, Creflo Dollar. I think it might have been Creflo Dollar, but
he's at 9. He's on at 10. He's at.
So you know, write in and get our thing right. So John Oliver, as part of his comedic sketch, writes in. And he gets the letter, and it's like, hey, if you give us, you know, this $50, we're going to get it back, and we're going to bless it, and God's going to multiply. And so he starts doing this, and every letter that comes is, you know, like, hey, you know, we need this and that, and you're going to get a blessing, and, you know, send more money. And it's just this whole grift going on for months. And I never thought that. I always had a struggle trying to understand why people fell for all this, why people did it. But when you saw the letters John Oliver was getting back from that ministry and the way they were written, you could really feel just how sneaky and deceptive it is. And no offense to some of you folks out there, but especially to either very desperate people or to older folks, especially older, lonely folks. Really pernicious. I must be losing a battery. Pernicious stuff, really just sneaky, deceptive stuff to just pull on your heart just a little bit. It doesn't feel like you're being conned out of your money. It feels like you're helping and you're getting something. Okay? The deceivers are rampant everywhere. And it's only going to get worse. Okay? And the Antichrist is the chief of the deceivers. Turn over to 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. Verse 3. For when they say peace and safety, then sudden destruction comes upon them, as labor pains upon a pregnant woman. They shall not escape. Go to Jeremiah, back to your Old Testament. Jeremiah chapter 6. Jeremiah is before Daniel, before Ezekiel, before Lamentations, right after Isaiah. Jeremiah chapter 6. Verse 1, O you children of Benjamin, gather yourselves to flee from the midst of Jerusalem. Blow the trumpet in Tekoa and set up a signal fire in Beth Hasserim, for disaster appears out of the north and great destruction. Go to verse 14. Then they also have healed the herds of my people slightly, saying, peace, peace, when there is no peace. And we looked at a few of these verses in chapter 14 last week, where the false prophets were telling Israel, peace is coming, peace is here. And Jeremiah's like, it's not. God is sending destruction. Don't listen to the people who fool you into believing peace. But people want peace. People want this peace that they can manipulate and they can control. And the Antichrist is going to come along and offer that peace, and it's going to appeal to folks. People are going to want it so bad. It's finally here, and they give over to him the power, the crown, to do as he pleases. And so he unifies the people in a false peace. And this is the beginning of God's judgment. That false peace is very short-lived. It's the beginning of birth pains. Real peace only comes and only will last with the Prince of Peace. And he comes at the end of all of this. And God has a very long history. I just read to you several of Jesus' warnings about all of this judgment. We're in Revelation. It's all this warning about judgment. And I thought this was really interesting as I prepared for this week, that John MacArthur said, God has a long history of warning people before judgment comes. Right? He warned Adam and Eve in the garden. Judgment is coming. Okay? If you do this, you will die. Right? And then he gave Noah 120 years to warn the people. Judgment. And he even warned Cain, right? If you don't control this roaring lion, judgment will come. And it came. Then Noah, 120 years of warning the people. He warned Sodom and Gomorrah. He warned Egypt. He warned the Israelites throughout the whole book of Judges. He warned Israel before they went into exile. If you don't listen, judgment will come. And then he said, it's too late. Judgment is coming. Now buckle up and be ready to ride out the storm. And Jesus says, judgment is coming, Jerusalem. Judgment is coming. And he was talking about both that judgment that came on Jerusalem just 30 years after, as well as the judgment that comes at the end. And then we see the book of Revelation, where God is warning us about judgment. And so I want us to take just a few minutes to look at the remaining horsemen, because they can be covered in a much more quick form. Because you're intelligent folks. You get a false peace in this world, whether it was Rome or Greece, or even in America, as we said, how do we maintain that peace? Through force. And so we see the second seal opened up. We see the red horse, the horse of war. Okay, and the rider has a sword. Interestingly, it's not the Greek word for a broadsword, but the Greek word for a dagger, which intimates close, personal killing. I think that's really interesting, and I'm not one to do a lot of speculation about the book of Revelation, you know, locusts being helicopters and all of that stuff, but I do think it's really interesting, because how do we conduct killing? Right? Guns. Right? Can be pretty close up, right? So I just think that's an interesting little personal note. But we see the red horse. So go to Revelation chapter 6, verse 3. When he opened the second seal, I heard the second living creature saying, come and see. Another horse, fiery red, went out, and it was granted to the one who sat on it to take peace from the earth, and that the people should kill one another, and there was given to him a great sword. Peace broken, right? So, the end of peace. The third seal, we see the black horse and rider. Read that with me. Verse 5. When he opened the third seal, I heard a third living creature say, come and see. I looked, and behold, a black horse, and he who sat on it had a pair of scales in his hand. And I heard a voice in the midst of the four living creatures saying, a quart of wheat for a denarius, and three quarts of barley for a denarius, and do not harm the oil and wine. We see that you have war, then you have what? Famine. Hunger. This is not unusual. This is not out of the normal pattern, right? Whether you have the man, look at how even in the 20th century, you have Europe in this tentative peace, right? All these interlocking alliances and treaties that they had signed after the Crimean War and after several other wars of the 19th century, and it's just, you know, bloodshed everywhere. So many people dead. I mean, they would lose entire generations, all the young men gone. And so they formed all these alliances. We'll back you if you back us. And meanwhile, we'll back you if you back us. And all these other things. And it all blew up, right? 1914 with the killing of the Archduke, right? And they had a huge war, the war to end all wars. And then what was left, right? The battlefields were across the farmland. The farmers were all dead. Then they had massive famine, massive death. And what comes when people start dying because they don't have food? Then what do you get?
Disease.
Okay? Disease or pestilence. What's the biggest disease you get when there's dead bodies that aren't taken care of?
Cholera.
Cholera comes from the water, but there's one other one. Typhus. Typhoid fever. Okay. In China, World War II, you know, Japan is bombing the farmlands, bombing the cities, all the refugees, they're all crowded into camps, people are injured and hurt, they're sick, they're dying, they can't take care of the bodies, they're getting cholera, they're getting typhus, okay? Gladys Aylward, famous missionary there, got typhus and was out of her mind, delusional for months. Miracle that she recovered, okay? What's the number one killer of humanity?
Humanity.
Aside from humanity. Anybody know?
Influenza?
No. What's the number one killer? Rats. Bubonic plague, right? Nothing has been more devastating to the human population than bubonic plague, and continues to kill people. And rats kill people, both through bubonic plague, but also through the entire incredible devastation they can do to crops, store food stores, everything. They are incredibly destructive. One stat that I found was that if you kill 95% of a rat population in an area, it can rebound triple by the end of that year. I mean, it is devastating. And so you can see peace, false peace, how is it maintained? It has to be maintained through war. And what follows war naturally, but famine and hunger and our fourth seal with the pale or the green, depending on your translation. And that is death. These are the natural progressions of humans left without God's intervention. No? Did I do something wrong? Pay alone. Yeah. There should be an S there. Thanks, David. My lesdexia gets involved once in a while. So, we see famine. We see, you know, slaughter and violence, men killing one another, not just nations, but men themselves killing one another. We see then famine and hunger. We see inflation because of scarcity, right? That's why the food costs so much. We see that people have to eat undesirable food because they're eating barley, okay? And barley is not great for eating, kind of lousy. We've grown wheat, oat, and barley on our farm. And I can go to the field, thresh a little bit, and eat the grains. And we grew barley most of my childhood, and it was never good. It's like, not nice to eat. Now we grow wheat, and if you have, that's not bad. I can eat the wheat kernels, but barley, not fun to eat. I mean, the cows don't even like it. So it's not great food, all right? And this is what people are eating. We see even in our world today where we have so much government intervention in the food supply, in control of disease. Okay, we just all live through that, right? We see how involved the government is and what it could be with gain of function research and all of their failed attempts to limit and control diseases. Okay, the world's not... I grew up in the 90s with all the Weekly Reader stuff. Do you remember the Weekly Reader, some of you? Tom, you remember. And it would talk about how, like, the rich people are, you know, Bill Gates and others, they're out there trying to do research to figure out, like, how they can control us from the next pandemic, how they can control us from global warming. There's always talking about people, the governments getting together to figure out what they could do to hold on to that. Dave and Julie are the same generation, or just a little bit younger than me, right? You remember those.
Yeah.
So you see, you remember how they were always talking about that, how excited they were. We were doing drills on how to fight the next big outbreak. And then there were movies about it, right? Different movies about outbreaks that you could watch and tell everybody to stay home. And then it's like, then it all happened, right? Then it all happened. They were so excited. They'd been looking for this crisis for 30 years. Oh boy, we finally get to show the world that we can do better than they did 1,000 years ago during the bubonic plague. You know, I think that was kind of in the mindset of so many of those eggheads like Dr. Fauci and others. They're like, we can show everybody that we really know how to control what's happening. But when it all falls apart in the midst of war and breakdown, you're still going to be left with the same old happening. Present-day attack on our food supply is not just from government, but it's also from activists, right? It's all the people who are telling me how to raise cows these days, like, you know, you can't take your tails off, you can't do this, don't eat animals at all, don't grow that kind of food, don't use this technology, whatever it is. There's just all sorts of...
Chickens have to be free range.
Chickens need to be free range, you know, and just so you know, I mean, free range chickens just means the cages are bigger. Okay. I mean, not for you personally. I mean, you can let them free range, you know, in your backyard all you want. But eggs still have to be made for 300 million people in this country alone on a daily basis. And they don't come from backyard chickens. And so the big farms that you're buying your free range eggs from just went from having a cage with 3 chickens in it to having a cage with 1,000 chickens in it. And they don't really have any more room in the 1,000 chicken cage than they did in this 3 chicken cage. So just so you know, you're buying a pig in a poke. You're being deceived.
Mm-hmm.
And we get to the fourth horse, right? We open the fourth seal, and I heard a voice from the fourth living creature saying, come and see. So I looked, and behold, a pale horse, and the name who sat on him was Death, and Hades followed with him, and power was given to them over a fourth of the earth to kill with the sword, with hunger, with death, and by the beasts of the earth. And this is kind of the final thing I think that really stands out is, we're being killed by the beasts of the earth. Now, I know that still around the world, even in America, every year people are killed by animals, right? Sharks, bees, spiders, snakes, people die from beasts. But it's not generally the big killer, right? It's not that notable. Do you know what the number one killer of people is in America when it comes to animals?
Cows.
Cows kill more people than any other animal in America. And it's not usually attacks. You know, occasionally somebody gets attacked by a bull, but generally it's just because people are working with cows, and there's a lot of cows, and they're big, dumb animals, and they fall on you, crush you, run you over, stuff like that. So we're talking here in the book of Revelation, though, that about reaching a point of such disorder in the world where people are, if there's famine and disease and the outcomes of war, don't you think wolves and lions and tigers still would like to eat too? They're hungry as well, right? And so we see that even the wild animals are going to be involved in this disaster that's coming upon the earth in the first four seals. And what's particularly notable, and we'll wrap up here, you know, is thinking about how the first four seals of judgment are so much just the natural progression of man left without God intervening on his behalf. God, remember we read the passages when we started this chapter where God said, let them alone. I'm abandoning them to judgment. Okay, I'm withdrawing. Let them suffer the consequences of their own actions. And this is what happens. First, humanity's like, all right, we can do this. We get together. And then that has to be enforced. And there has to be other natural occurring consequences that come from all that. This is the path humanity goes on. Evil and wickedness continuously. So that's the first four seals. Any questions? Any discussion? We're going to move on next week to the fifth seal. Yeah, mom.
So different how, you know, people think that everybody has good in them, and that left to ourselves we would be
better. Yeah.
And it isn't that way.
I mean, there is on each of us the image of God.
Yeah.
Right? The understanding to know good from evil. The desire for good things for ourselves, for those we love. But we are also overwhelmingly sinful and fallen people.
I think it's interesting, the favorite Christmas card is peace on earth, but that wasn't the message. It was peace on earth among those with whom he is pleased.
Yeah.
But that got twisted into being.
Yeah. That's why Joy to the World is such a wonderful hymn, right? Because it's not really isolated to, hey, joy to the world, Jesus is here right now as a baby. It's, if you read the whole hymn, it's about Jesus is coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Joy to the world, and it says, he rules the earth, right? And then no more let the curse flow out. No let thorns infest the ground. That hasn't happened yet, right? And then the final verse, he rules the world in truth and love and makes the nations prove the glories of his
righteousness
and wonders of his love. That's coming. We're going to get there. But we got to go through what Jesus told them was coming too. We're going to talk more about the Olivet Discourse in the coming weeks as well. We are way out of time. Dear Lord, thank you so much for your continuous determination to warn humanity about the judgment that's coming and about the clarity your book gives to us about our inability to obtain peace for ourselves on our own without you. Help us to be prepared to share both the hope that we have and these frank, stark truths with those around us who are already deceived and being deceived into believing that humans are basically good and that all people are going to heaven and that you don't have any judgment left when we know that that's not true. I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Mm-hmm.